The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. And our veteran today is Dakota Dawn Goldsmith. Welcome, Dakota.
Good morning.
You had a career in the Army?
That is correct.
You just wound up?
Yep, 6 years ago, just this month, I left the Army.
Uh-huh.
10 years, 7 months, and 5 days, not that I was ever counting.
Tell us what made you join the Army?
It's a funny story how I ended up in the Army. I come from a long line of people who have served. Parents served, my mom's dad in the Navy, my dad's dad in the Air Force. Both my parents served in the Marine Corps. I have a younger brother who also served in the Army after me.
Wow.
But I actually went to join the Navy. The Navy was at lunch. The Army recruiter was outside. His name was Sergeant First Class Hader. You can't make this up. He's outside with coffee in one hand, a cigarette in the other, and he said, well, you're already here, why don't you come talk to me? And the same day, got on a bus, went up to Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, Alabama, raised my right hand that same day after taking the test and doing the physical, signed up to be a 37 Fox, which is a psychological operations specialist.
Uh-huh.
Came home, thought about it, and said, I don't want to get stationed at Fort Bragg in North Carolina. So I asked if I could change my job, and they're like, sure you can. So I changed my job to become a public affairs broadcast specialist, went through basic training, went through my advanced individual training, and then got pinpoint orders to the 4th Psychological Operations Group at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. So,
no kidding.
And that is where I spent my entire 10 years in the Army, was at Fort Bragg.
That is an interesting way to come in.
Yeah.
And you went up to the Air Force Base?
That's where the military entrance processing station is in Alabama. Was
I
in Maxwell.
See. From there to Fort Bragg and the 4th PSYOPs.
So I went from there to Fort Jackson, as they call it, Relaxin' Jackson, for basic training,
right.
And then to the Defense Information School for my advanced individual training.
And what is your background before?
So I'm from a really small town in southern Alabama. I grew up on the Gulf Coast.
Mm-hmm.
There are some great things, though, that come from small town Alabama. I actually went to the same high school as current Apple CEO Tim Cook.
Wow.
Yeah. So most people don't know that. He's from this little small town called Robertsdale, Alabama. I grew up in the town next to that called Silver Hill. We have 5 churches and 1 stoplight. It is that small of a town. And we didn't get the stoplight until my senior year of high school.
So you came in and ended up at Fort Bragg Psychological Operations. What is that?
I wouldn't say it's secretive. It is part of the special operations community.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different things that they do. I can't go into too many specifics about what they do, but I specifically worked in doing broadcast products.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would do is I would take messages and tailor them. A lot of the times it was like, hey, we're bringing clinics into your community, you know, vaccinations or water sources, and just mm-hmm. depending on what's going on, or, hey, there are bad guys in your neighborhood, this is how you can report them. So depending on what area we were operating in, that's what our messaging would be about.
And that's always overseas, right, or out of country.
Yeah,
we're not
targeting American citizens in that group. Yeah.
Very fascinating. Any interesting stories?
When I joined the Army, I remember coming home and actually telling my dad that I had joined the Army. My dad's like, hey, where have you been all day? What do you do? And he's sitting at the kitchen table, and I told him, and he spit sweet tea across the kitchen table because he was laughing so hard. And then he looked at me, and he was like, oh, you're serious? And he looks at me and says, Dakota Dawn, there's a war going on. And I said, yeah, Dad, I know, because, you know, I was 18 years old. I knew everything.
Yeah.
But it didn't hit me that there was a war until, you know, a little less than 2 years later, and I was sitting on the tarmac in Baghdad. So, you know, and that was the reality of war.
Wow.
Interesting fact is I got to be neighbors with Saddam Hussein until his death in 2006. I didn't realize at the time that he literally lived, was being held across the street from our task force at the time.
Oh, my God.
So I always tell, you know, when they do the truth and a lie, that's always one of my truths. And people never guess that that's the truth. They're like, there's no way you were neighbors with Saddam Hussein. I always find it interesting.
That's funny. Mm-hmm. That was in Baghdad. Tell me about your trip to Baghdad. It wasn't exactly on first class.
No. So just Air Force plane, C-130. Thankfully, I'm short. I'm only about 5'3", so big cargo holds. I slept comfortably in between that, you know, on the steel floor,
mm-hmm.
and big cargo containers and some in the wall. good 14 hours. Mm. Not too bad.
You said that was a C-130?
Yeah, a C-130.
Across the water?
Across the water,
wow,
yeah.
That's, yeah. Yes. C-130, folks, is a prop plane.
Yep.
It's kind of the pickup truck of the Air Force,
yes.
We call it. Yeah.
We did stop in Germany. We did have a nice little layover.
Mm-hmm. What did you think when you landed in Baghdad?
You know, being from the South, we're used to the heat, mm-hmm. but it's just a totally different heat when you get over there. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of dirt in the air. I think even after coming home, I still blew dirt out of my nose for months and months on end.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different, you know. Mm-hmm. I would say that I didn't get to experience as much of, you know, the country until my second deployment, and that was in 2010, and I was there during an election year. And what I found very interesting is that during that election, I was sitting around that evening playing cards with a Brit, a Welshman, a German, and an Aussie. And around us, you heard small arms fire, and there were some improvised explosive devices and some mortar fire going off. And we all just look at each other, and the Brit looks at me, and you know, there's dead quiet, and he's like, democracy. And I look at him, and I was like, you know, history does echo, correct? You know, we've got a little history with the Brits, so,
yeah.
You know, the irony wasn't lost on us that democracy was, you know, there's a little repeating of the history going on there.
Were you scared?
You know, I don't think that you're scared in those moments. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's different. I think reflecting back on it, you can see how it's scary, but it's just your life in that moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I had some friends over there that the women were often used to go out to the villages, and they wanted something to give, so I rounded up a bunch of Beanie Babies and sent them over there. Did you see any of that type of work?
So we did do a lot of the civil military operations type work, mm-hmm. but a lot of times when you give things to the children, sometimes you can start conflicts with those children groups, and you know the older kids will pick on, especially the female children, and they'll fight over things. So sometimes it was just best to avoid doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I did have the opportunity, though, to work with the Boy and Girl Scouts in Iraq. So they would bring them to a small part of our little base that we were at, and so we would do things with them on the weekend. So they would do, like, their own little Pledge of Allegiance to their flag, and we would do, like, arts and crafts and play soccer with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, an after-school-type program that we were able to participate in with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was nice to be able to bring that.
Did you travel throughout Iraq? Or?
I got to see some very interesting parts of it. I would say that my favorite part, it's not Iraq, but Kurdistan, and mm-hmm. getting to work with them. And those are some of the hardest working people I've ever experienced during my time throughout the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
We're definitely working with the Kurds.
Mm-hmm. Not to get political, but we have a sort of a shaky history with them of letting them down, so to speak.
I think that there's a lot of cultures that could probably say that about us.
Yeah.
My personal experience with them was positive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What did they think of the Americans? Did you get a feel for that?
I think throughout my time in the Middle East, I've also been to Jordan, too, is that Americans in general are seen as work, work, work. We're mm-hmm. very focused. We go in, and that's we get to work. We don't spend a lot of time building personal relationships. Mm-hmm. And this is something I noticed during my time in Jordan, where it was like, you know, I come in at 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and it's like, turn on my computer, let's get to work. And they're like, no, Dakota, come have coffee.
Yeah.
Have a cigarette, and I don't smoke, and I don't really drink coffee. And they're like, well, at least have a cup of tea. So, you know, I do drink tea, so I'd come in and have a cup of tea. And they'd want to know, like, how's your family? How are you? And it's to build that rapport and that cross-cultural relationship. You need that, and you want to learn about your people. You know, I think that's one of the things that we did when we went into Iraq. Mm-hmm. is that we wanted to bring them our ideals of democracy, and that's kind of where we failed. And we're like, if we were here and this was going on, what would we want? But we didn't know how they were living. Mm-hmm. We knew how we were living. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was important for us to take that time to get to know them at, you know, and their daily life instead of bringing in our daily lives and applying, you know, our background into
yeah.
what they were doing.
Yeah. Well, that's I've run across that too. I mean, as Americans, we're very work oriented, and we could learn a lot from them as far as, you know, building rapport and having that cup of tea or cup of coffee. How long were you over there?
So my first deployment was almost 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
And my second one was about 7 months as well.
Mm-hmm. Both similar type jobs.
So the first, I actually went back to the same task force. So the first one I worked within the detachment. And then on my second one, I was a brand new staff sergeant E6 mm-hmm. and the only female in a leadership position. And I was in charge of 7 male soldiers. So that was definitely a different power dynamic.
How'd that work out?
You know, a lot of people, they don't think women are capable. Sometimes you get that. You get marginalized as a woman. Yeah. I would definitely say that my experiences in the SOF community were far different than they were in the conventional side of the Army. When I left the SOF community, I definitely think I was very empowered within the SOF community.
SOF being Special Operations Forces,
correct. And that particular... Excuse me for a second.
Yeah, sure. It's very dry air mm-hmm. in here at the North Carolina Reading Service.
Yes.
Anyone want to donate a humidifier?
But within the Special Operations Forces community, I had great leaders. I had very strong female leaders as well. My male soldiers were very respectable, and they, you know, were very focused on the mission. And I was empowered to do what I needed to do to take care of whatever needed to be taken yeah. care of.
I think that's something the public would be very pleased if they saw how between race, gender, religion, everything, the military is probably the most diverse organization in the world, the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And did you ever feel threatened or anything? Or,
you know, I think that I was incredibly fortunate yeah. as a female soldier when I first joined the Army that I came into a unit where I had a very strong female first sergeant. Not everyone is that fortunate. I think about Vanessa Guillen, who unfortunately was murdered down at Fort Hood. And, you know, I feel like she was failed by her command at Venice that's currently serving in Korea. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad that I even had to have a discussion with her when she got to her unit. Like, use the buddy system. Mm-hmm. If you see something, say something. Don't do the following things because you could become a victim. That climate still exists, and it's 2021, and it shouldn't. But I was very fortunate that I had such strong female role models, that I had female non-commissioned officers and officers that I worked with who were very supportive, and we always looked out for one another. And I also had very strong male leaders who didn't tolerate that kind of behavior. And I feel like the Army is, or the military in general, is moving towards, you know, getting rid of that in the ranks.
Yeah, yeah, that comports with... what I've noticed and seen and experienced. Tell me a little bit about yourself. What would you do growing up? What kind of hobbies do you have or did you have? Do you have?
So growing up, you know, I grew up on the Gulf Coast. So
is it Foley, Alabama?
That is where my mom went to high school, is Foley, Alabama.
Saw that somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. So I grew up, you know, the Gulf Shores area. My grandparents lived on Fort Morgan down there. There's the old Civil War fort that we used to go and hang out with. But, you know, fishing with my grandpa, it's one of my favorite pastimes. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was a police officer in Foley, and then he was the assistant chief of police in Alberta, Alabama. So I just loved hanging out with him. He was my role model growing up. And so, you know, fishing with my papaw, as I called him, yeah. that was one of the things I absolutely loved to do. And we were very, very close.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And is he still with us? Or?
No, unfortunately, and I don't want to tear up, but he yeah. passed away actually the day that I was supposed to go on my original deployment. I'd actually had gotten the call that he passed away right after my flight had been canceled. The irony of it is that, the you know, just a few days before, he said he had done anything to take my place.
Oh, boy, that tears me up.
Yeah, he was a very special man.
And you had such a military-involved family.
Yeah.
I have done interviews where I ask people, you know, what made you join? And sometimes it just knocks you over with the simplicity, dedication to their country. And it's amazing. So I always like to ask that.
Yeah. Well, you know, there is the patriotism part, but the other part is that I'm a kid that didn't grow up with a lot. You know, mm-hmm. I probably could say that for the most part grew up, you know, at or right below the poverty line. Mm-hmm. And the thought of, you know, starting my adult life with this egregious amount of student loan debt was overwhelming to me, and I knew that the military would give me that stepping stone I needed, mm-hmm. and never really crossed my mind that I'd be literally risking my life for an education, but that's ultimately what I did. No regrets there. I mean, I made it out alive, and I did get a really amazing education. I went to school right here in North Carolina at Campbell University.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful school, and they're absolutely great program with the veterans.
Mm-hmm.
I can't praise them enough. It made me feel like I was home the whole time I was there after leaving the military.
Mm-hmm. I just met the president of Campbell.
Dr. Creed.
About 2 weeks ago. Yeah, he was visiting my work. Have you continued on with your education or thinking about it?
I graduated from Campbell mm-hmm. in 2019 with my bachelor's in psychology.
Good for you. Good for you. How about law? I see you as a lawyer.
we'll see about that one.
Yeah. Right in downtown Raleigh.
Yeah.
What else have you done that maybe I don't know about?
I love to cook. I cook all the time. My friends all joke that I'm a Renaissance woman. There's probably nothing that I can't do. My daughter says I do old lady crafts. I crochet, I knit, I paint, I draw. I really do try to do it all.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk about your children at all?
Yeah. So I love to talk about them.
Put hubby in there too.
Yeah. Oh, I'm very proud of him as well. So I'll start with my kids though. My older daughter Reagan, and she's amazing. I can't say enough about her. She is my first post-deployment baby. My husband moved back from Germany. I came home from Iraq, and you know, that's normally how that happens. Ask any military family. Mm-hmm. She's just incredible. She's a great big sister. She's 13. She mm-hmm. thinks she's 30. most of them do. I won't talk about it too much. I'll embarrass her, but I'm very, very proud of her. She's an amazing young lady. And then my younger daughter, Nolan, which we get some flack for because we named her Nolan. We tell her we named her after Nolan Ryan. We may or may not be huge Astros fans. She's also incredible, a great little sister. And she's a little spitfire.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely wasn't ready for her. But she's probably also the reason we don't have any more kids, because she's a handful. She'll be happy to hear that.
In a good way.
Yes. And then my husband, who I actually met in basic training. Mm-hmm. Over M16s and push-ups. It's a funny story. We actually got Article 15s because we got caught passing notes to one another in basic training.
Kind of a harsh thing.
I know. Well, he got caught. I didn't get caught. Let's just let that be clear. I'll never forget the drill sergeant coming in to the chow hall during basic. And he was like, "Private Sylvester, how long have you been in love with Private Goldsmith?" And I was like, why does it even matter now? And I was pretty upset. And then at the time, I actually was an E2 and he was an E1.
Mm-hmm.
So the joke has always been, they took money out of my paycheck, part of the Article 15, because I outranked him and I needed to set the example. So the joke has always been, I told him, you either pay me my $300 or we get married. So he chose to marry me, which just shows that he's a cheapskate, because he could have really gotten out of that one.
That is funny.
Yeah. But we've been married it'll be 16 years this year.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. That is a part of the sacrifices in the military that a lot of people don't realize is when two people are in and you try to stay together. But in a war situation, in the jobs that you both had, I'm sure that was very difficult.
Yes.
And, but it worked out. Mm-hmm.
So I was a broadcaster and he was a broadcast technician.
Mm-hmm.
And then after his first deployment, he decided to go special forces.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to assessment and selection and was selected and went through the course. And then it came to a point in our careers where I was getting assigned, I got an assignment to Korea and he was in Afghanistan with 3rd Special Forces Group. And I just knew that for the betterment of our family, I needed to stay here
mm-hmm.
and to take care of our girls and to be here to support him in his career. So I made the decision to stay here and to get out of the Army and to go back to school. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud of him. He's an excellent soldier. And it's hard, you know, being a Green Beret, that's the top tier of soldiers in the Army.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of travel, a lot of training and travel. Mm-hmm. And travel with work related.
Yes.
So how many years did you complete? You didn't.
10 years, 7 months, and 5 days. Not that I was ever counting.
But who's counting?
Yes, okay, that's right.
Trying to see whether you had retired or not, been able to retire. Did he retire? Was he able to retire?
He's getting close.
He's getting close.
He's getting close, okay, yeah.
Good. Well, excuse me. Now, you said something about Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you do there?
So I went to Jordan for a joint multinational exercise called Eager Lion.
Mm-hmm.
It has, you know, a ton of different countries that participate, Jordan, the United States, the UK. So I went there in a public affairs capacity. The person that does information operations, that planner didn't show up, something I guess with travel or whatnot. That actually was an additional skill that I had. And I had gone to the training for, so they asked me if I would take that skill set on. So I ended up working in the higher command and working as one of the exercise planners and creating injects for the exercise. One of the other great aspects of being there in Jordan is being able to go and to travel around a little bit in Jordan, which I got to go to the baptismal site in Bethany, where John the Baptist baptized Jesus. Which is pretty neat because, you know, it's the Jordan River.
I guess.
And right on the other side is Israel. And, you know, the Israelis were walking around with their AK-47s, but we're in the river. And these people are on the other side. And they're like, hey, y'all, where are y'all from? And we're like, where are y'all from? They're like, we're from Texas. And I was like, well, we're from, you know, North Carolina. And they're waving to us. And the guys are like, don't get any closer to them. And we're like, okay. They had like a, you know, like a barricade in the middle of the river. But I just thought it was neat, you know, what a small world that we're right here next to people from Texas, you know. And yeah. I had the opportunity to get baptized in the Jordan River, which I thought was, you know, nice. We had some chaplains with us while we were there.
Yeah. Gosh, yeah. That must have been giving me chill bumps.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a neat experience to walk, you know, that path there and to think, you know, just the history of it.
Yeah. How much time did you spend there?
It was almost a whole entire month I got to spend in Jordan, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any other places? Many?
Well, I might have gotten to sneak down to Petra, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're the Indiana Jones piece where you walk, and it gets more narrow, and then bam, there's Petra, which is, you know, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and it's just amazing to see in person, you know, the carvings and like.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to see that.
And the Dead Sea, of course, which you can't even, you know, everyone floats.
Did you get in?
Yes, of course. Rub the mud all over. Yeah, you have to. You have to experience that. Kind of makes up for being at Fort Bragg or career, getting that just a few little taste of different parts of the world. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What would you advise a young person who might not know what they want to do?
You know, I tell even my own daughters, I think serving your country is great. I think it's a great stepping stone. You know, at 18, I thought that I knew everything and, you know, I was working retail and waiting tables. I think the Army gave me a lot of discipline, a lot of the discipline I thought I had, but I definitely didn't have. You know, I was able to buy my first house at 23. It gave me financial stability and health care and the things that are incredibly important that you don't even think about when you're 18 years old. And it gave me a set of life skills I don't think I'd otherwise have. And, you know, like I mentioned before, it gave me the stepping stone I needed to get out of the place that I was. Like, you know, we as parents always want our kids to have more than what we had. And, you know, I have that for myself. And now my kids, I've provided them a stepping stone so they can have more as well. So, I mean, I think if you're lost and confused and you want to be part of something bigger than yourself, that the military is a great place for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well stated. How often do you still have relatives in Alabama?
I do. Yeah, most of my family still lives there. My brother works for the government.
Uh huh.
he was an Apache armament mechanic in the military, and now that's what he does in the civilian world as well. So again, the military gives you some great life skills, and he definitely makes more as a civilian than he did when he was in the military. I work for the government as a civilian now, so, you know, definitely make more as a civilian than I did in the
Opportunity.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of opportunity. I talked to somebody at work whose daughter wanted to, I think, a nurse or a PA. And anyway, I was telling about the military opportunities. It's an organization. It's on Bethesda in Maryland, but it's not part of Bethesda. And it's basically a university for all the medical doctors, nurses, dentists, all that. And you get paid as a second lieutenant while you're going through, all the books free, everything free, plus pay. And, oh, no, I'm not going to let my daughter join the military. Oh, no. And there's a stereotype about the military. I know when I came in, my knowledge in Raleigh about the military was Beetle Bailey cartoons, TV shows maybe, which are not very realistic, are they?
No. No, not at all. I would say that, you know, my younger years in the Army, it's kind of like college, you know, just maybe not with the textbooks and studying. It was just, you get paid to be in shape. There's a camaraderie like no other. You know, my friends for life, you know, I had friends from high school I thought that would be my best friends for forever. That's not really the case. But my friends that, you know, I lived that, as we say, the suck with. You know, I was down in the dirt and in the mud with, and, you know, out in the field training with, those will be my friends for the rest of my life. If something were to happen to me tomorrow, they are the ones that will carry my casket to my grave. Like, they're the people who know me better than anyone else.
Yeah. It's, I'm a cheerleader for the military, and, unabashedly, it's just a lot of opportunity. One son took to it, and I didn't try to push them.
I will say it's not for everybody, and and if you don't feel it in your heart, I wouldn't say do it, because
that's right.
Yeah.
It does offer you a tremendous amount of opportunity, and you can go as high as you have the desire to in education, which usually translates to helping your promotions too. Well, Dakota Dawn, what do you want to wrap up with?
Well, I'd like to say that it is Mental Health Awareness Month. And if there are anyone who's listening, especially any veteran listeners, that they take some time for a little self-care, if they need resources, that they reach out to their friends or family or to Veterans Affairs and get those resources that they need, because you need to take care of yourself. You need to be aware. You're never alone. There's always someone there for you, to listen to you, to take care of you.
That was very well said, and she's saying that with no notes. I think we should start a radio show.
One day, Frank, one day.
Well, that's all the time we have for Salute a Veteran Every Day. We could go on and on. Dakota Dawn Goldsmith, thank you so much for being here, driving up from Cameron, right?
Yes.
The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast right after our broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. See you next time.